I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Nick Jane. He is the co-founder of Eagle Rock CFO. They are a tech-enabled consultancy that gives practical AI plus human-powered advice to small business owners on how to make their businesses more profitable in the next 30 days. I love that. Quick and actionable. Nick has an MBA from Harvard Business School and has been the CFO or CEO of three businesses up to $100 million in revenue. Nick, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Craig. Really excited to be here.
Yeah. So that's, you know, it's interesting. I was reading an article this morning and it was talking about AI. And it was a little bit of a doomsday article, you know, basically saying, and it was written by a developer saying that, you know, his job is no longer writing code and that those days are pretty much over. And he's been shocked how quickly it's moved. And he said, you know, they're probably, if you're doing white collar work, they're probably coming for your business next. But his general advice was, you know, get ahead of it and figure out how to make AI your productivity tool. And it sounds like you guys are using that, taking that advice.
Exactly. We're using, part of our approach is using AI, but part of our approach is just using a lot of technology that's existed for 10, 20 years, but no one's thought to apply it so much to kind of the small business space. So a little bit of what we do is like fancy AI, but a lot of it, what we do is traditional technology, but just trying to deliver to an audience that historically hasn't had access to that level of technology before.
That's cool. What are some examples of that technology?
Sure. So like, okay, so if you think about, if you've ever worked at a large corporation and hired a big consulting firm like a McKinsey or Bain or Accenture, they bring in some very, very smart people who work hundreds of hours over the course of the month and give you, you know, a multi-$100,000 bill for some amazing work. But a lot of that is because you're requiring very, very smart people who spent a decade getting, you know, MBAs and PhDs working very long hours. And that's expensive. What our technology does, I think, is do three things really well that otherwise those you need very, very smart, expensive people to do. Number one, it eats up data. So you don't have to have someone cleaning up data or looking for Excel files or emailing stuff back and forth. Number two is it compresses, you know, the big data files down into small data files that AI can eat. If you ever, you know, tried to give ChatGPT or Gemini like a big data file with thousands of rows or a PDF with hundreds of pages, it often starts losing itself and hallucinating and making stuff up. So you got to compress data. That's kind of the second thing we do really well. And then the third thing we do with kind of our technology stack that gives massive leverage to us as a team is we put out a beautiful report. So instead of very, very smart, expensive people making PowerPoints and presentations and writing memos, our technology does that. So what that frees up the human being, i.e. my business partner Dan and I, to do is really focus on the kind of critical thinking and the human thinking rather than eating up data, rather than compressing data, rather than making PowerPoints. And that's all stuff you would normally have to pay like somebody $200 or $300 an hour for 100 hours a month. That now technology does, but kind of largely automatically.
You know, I actually went through an M&A where Bain Capital was involved. And the, you know, I spent an afternoon with one of the guys and he was asking me questions. I was impressed. He's one of the smartest people I've ever met. And I've met some exceptionally smart people. And at the time I was working in a company that was packed full of exceptionally smart people. What impressed me was he was very smart from a business standpoint, but he was asking some technology questions about our technology that Never in a thousand years would I expect a business person to know to ask these questions. What do you see his role? So if we just kind of take him as a prototype, what's his role in the new AI world?
Sure. And I should mention, once upon a time, I used to work at Bain Capital on their private equity team a long time ago. Very, very smart people there. I hope it's one of my former bosses that you're talking about. Yeah. So I think two things are going to happen. And so one of it you alluded to is like, look, a lot of white collar jobs are going to go away because the people who get good at using these technologies, and not just AI technology, but technology broadly, are going to get leverage. And a very silly example, and I'm going to roll back the clock 30 years, is once upon a time, people built financial models on paper before Excel and tools like that came out. And when you did that, if you made a mistake, you had to literally, redo a bunch of physical paper notes and physical paper calculations. And then all of a sudden, Excel came out, and that one, analyst or junior person could run the financial models for 10, 20, 30 companies instead of one on paper. And that's the same sort of thing that's going to happen, that the very smart people are going to now act and be able to do the jobs of 10, 20, 100 people at scale and also cover kind of their deficits. So those are two big changes. Number one, smart people are going to get like 10 to 100x leverage in terms of how much work they can do. And number two is they can also start to do sorts of work that they are not normally qualified to do. And I'll give a practical example. I suck at all things artistic. I can't make music, I can't make art videos and stuff like that. So I would have never touched any portion of workflow that involved kind of the artistic or creative side. Now, like I can do these technologies can do that part of my job, so I can expand to be a little bit more artistic than I would have been, let's say, 18 months ago. And the opposite is true. If you're an artistic person, you're let's say not mathematically or business inclined, you can expand your kind of purview of what you do for work over a little bit into kind of the quantitative side of things.
So if I go back to this gentleman from Maine that I met, and after I met with him, I thought, certainly this guy has to be a senior partner. And I went on the website, it was like, no, he was just one of like 100,
As analysts like I was, yes.
But it would seem to me that his job was knowing the right questions to ask, knowing the right business context to put those in, and taking that and having, kind of the wisdom to say, okay, here's what we're going to do. This is the way we're going to leverage this. If we broke that down, and maybe that's not the right analysis. If it's not, feel free to push back. But based on your time at Bain, what would be AI's job in all that, and what would be your job?
Sure. So again, jobs will fundamentally, first of all, I didn't really mention this, but it's not just people can do more, but actually what people will be responsible for doing is different, right? And you mentioned like the coder, right? His or her job is not to write code anymore, but to guide an AI that writes code. So you've become an art good engineer, software engineers are becoming architects and managers instead of actual coders. So the traditional coding job may entirely disappear over the next couple of years, or let's say decade. So in private equity, for example, there's kind of three core things that are going on: managing the relationships, number two, coordinating people, both inside the private equity firm as well as at portfolio companies, number three, doing analysis. And I think doing the analysis portion is the first part that is going to get largely automated away because machines can not only do it faster, but better. And they can do really three things really well. Number one, they can ingest data. So you can eat it. If you've ever been done an M&A deal, you get a huge wad of documents sitting in a data room, Excel files, PDFs, legal documents, contracts, lists of customers. Going through all that can take a team of people weeks to do. So number one, AI can do that very, very quickly, or just technology broadly can do that very quickly. Number two is to analyze all that information. So not just eat that information, like reading it, but analyze and think about it. And number three, and you alluded to this second go, is like figure out what matters. There might be 1,000 things going on at a company, but there's only like three or four things that might matter in figuring out whether this is a good company to invest in or not. And technology, or particularly some of the leading AI models, can do that really well. So they can look through, they can see the forest through the trees.
And that makes a lot of sense. And I think for a lot of these, for a lot of these folks, they are happy to get, to let AI do some of the automation that they used to do. It's, yeah, I mean, it's
No, I certainly am, right? Like, I don't, what is it? I have a prospective client we're chatting with. They wanted us to build a financial model. And yes, I can do it. I'm exceptionally fast at Excel, probably like top 1% Excel user. But rather than spending 10 hours building a model, it took me 35 minutes, I think, to build one using AI. And it's beautiful. It's as beautiful as anything I would have built, mathematically accurate, and took me 35 minutes instead of 10 hours. And I think, again, I'm very fast at Excel. So like it could beat me out by nine, what is that, 94%.
So literally, this is like the 10th or 12th time you've said Excel. And this is, it's funny. It's a technology that I think is near and dear to your heart. You have
Well,
a.
it's dear to everyone in the business world, right? If you do anything mathematical, right, whether you're adding 5 + 5, most people will open up Excel instead of a calculator and just add up 5 + 5 on that, or build all financial models in the world for the last 30 years have been built using that technology. And it's great. It's literally what everyone uses, right? Its role is going to change, though.
Well, you found love in Excel, if I'm not mistaken.
Not quite love, but we decided to take a relational bet. So my now wife, then girlfriend, had an opportunity to go to two very good schools. One was offering her a lot more money, and the other was offering her less money, but would be closer to where I was living and would allow us to continue our relationship. So we actually put this down on a spreadsheet and calculated, hey, is it worth giving up this expensive scholarship for a shot versus, a shot of true love? And the answer we figured out was yes. And I kid you not, I had a college professor who quantified happiness. That was his entire thing that he became famous for, Danny Blanchflower. And one of the things he became famous for was quantifying the value of a happy marriage or a happy relationship. So I took the numbers from his research, stuck it in our little Excel model, and said, like, here's weighing a very, very nice scholarship against the value of a lifetime marriage. What's the break-even odds? Like, how much do we have to bet on this relationship for it to be worth, giving up a lot of money for a scholarship as a bunch of 22-year-olds? And the answer came out, let's take this bet, and thankfully it worked out.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. There are some, especially so close to Valentine's Day, that would say, "Where's the heart in that?" But no, I like it.
Well, so look, the heart, so I'm a believer that marriage is, or relationships broadly, right, come down to kind of A, alignment of values, number two, some sort of spiritual or emotional connection, and number three, that it practically works. Everyone's got, and like the first two are kind of the let's say the touchy-feely side, and those are important to a relationship. But let's not also undermine that the fact that there are some practical things about a relationship that everyone wants. You have a checklist of things that you're looking for in a partner. They look a certain way, they have a certain religious belief system, they have a certain career track, economics, right? Like how much money they make. People have those checklists and what type of life they want to live, right? It doesn't even have to be the hard characteristics. It's like some people want to live a very sparse life and some people want to own private islands, and you want to make sure you are aligned on kind of the life you want to live. And those are things that I think a lot of people should be a little bit more thoughtful about, before they find that marriage. And I'm not talking about, dating when you're, 16 or 22, but the person you're going to spend 40 years with. A lot of things have to go, right and be aligned at the beginning so that you can have that marriage that lasts 40, 50, 60 years.
Yeah, that makes sense. Actually, that makes a lot of sense. So kind of back pivoting back to the whole AI thing, I mean, I was listening to a video. A firm that I listen to a lot is ITR Economics. They have like a 94% accuracy rate on predictions made 4 quarters out. They're saying that, they're seeing revenues rise, but there's continued margin pressure, as we go into 2026. And the thing that seems obvious is if, and some of that's because labor costs are going up and there's, other inflation in the economy, cost of goods sold is going up. But if you're going to be able to grow profit as opposed to just revenue, it seems like you have to do something different. You have to do something different. You have to become more efficient. And I'm curious from what your thoughts are on that.
So, I mean, what you said is tautologically true in the sense that if ultimately the goal of all business is to make profit, and the only way to make profit is you do something different. You offer a better product that other people can't offer, so you can charge a premium price for it, or you figure out a way to how to cut costs. And companies approach it different ways, right? Like, a highly innovative company, let's say the Apple, right? It tries to give you a better product that no one else can make so they can charge you a premium price and have very nice margins on it. And other companies, let's say in the commodities manufacturing sector, are really focused on cutting down costs as quickly as possible because their price, how much they sell a pound of steel for or a kilo of steel, is basically fixed. So they have to cut down their costs, whether that be energy, people, mining, it's raw materials, etc. So yes, it's true. I think the cool thing is, especially in the age of AI, two things happen. Number one, if you are AI forward or AI native, it is possible to build business models that are just way cheaper to deliver service. That's what we're doing. But the second thing that you can do is it's possible to deliver a product that wasn't possible before. And I'll use an old school example. If you roll back the clock 120 years, it would have cost roughly like $500,000 in today's money to buy a car. Right, so the average person would never be able to afford a car. And the innovation that came out was obviously automated manufacturing and the assembly line. Henry Ford and all those guys figured out, like, hey, if we create an assembly line and instead of making these artisanal, beautiful cars, we make the same boring thing and just make 1,000 of them quickly, we can bring down the cost of a car to $20,000 and make that affordable to a normal human being. So what that technology did was not necessarily improve the profit margins, but all of a sudden allow you to bring down the price at which you offered a service so you could offer an entirely new product, i.e. a mass-produced car to many, many people. The same thing happened with, mass-produced shoes in the 1800s, right? Cotton building and making a pair of shoes in the 1800s cost a lot of money. Sometime by the 1850s, it became possible to mass produce shoes. Now everyone wore, shoes instead of having to wear like leather with straps wrapped around your feet. And that's what AI is going to do. It's such a revolutionary technology that is now going to allow people to offer product and services at a price point that is affordable to a mass audience. Instead of you needing to pay, let's say, $50,000 for a CRM, it might be possible to offer a CRM for $100. And that's really terrifying for the existent, CRM incumbents, but it is awesome for all the people in the world right now who would love to have a CRM, a customer relationship management system, but can't afford it $50,000 a year because you are a solo operator or a 20-person company, not a 10,000-person company.
Right. So let's use an example, something like an HVAC company. Where do you see AI coming into that?
Sure. So I own a small rental construction business and I deal with kind of contractors all the time, right? They basically have four things that they pay for. Number one is, like, let's say materials, right? Lumber, parts, a furnace, air conditioner, whatever. Number two is the labor. And those two things aren't going to change too much in the near term because they're physical limitations to, what a piece of lumber costs. You can argue there's some second order effects, but I'll skip that for a moment. But they still have two kind of major expenses. They spend a lot of time kind of doing, let's call it the accounting side, billing people, collecting money, etc. That technology can do right now, both AI technology and other kind of quote unquote traditional technology. So they should be, instead of paying somebody a part-time to be their bookkeeper, accountant, or making sure I paid my bills, etc., that technology can do that. And that's going to save let's say, a $500,000 HVAC business. That's going to save them $20,000-$30,000 a year. That's pretty significant, right? And then the second side is the estimation. So if you've ever hired a contractor to do work on your house, he or she comes in, they look around, let's say your HVAC system and say, like, hey, Craig, your furnace is 25 years old. It needs to be upgraded. It's going to cost you 8 grand. That requires them to come out. And so that requires them to drive out, spend 20 minutes walking around your house, inspecting your ducts and your furnace, and then sending you a, they go back to their office and they send you a quote saying, Craig, this is going to cost you $8,000. Here's the parts, here's the labor. That entire estimation process can now not only be done remotely, but largely can be done with like 80%+ accuracy entirely by technology. So you from your home can take a picture of your furnace, you can walk around, take a picture of your air ducts or video, you can send that over to them. Some piece of technology or some guy sitting at a computer can come up with an estimate and automatically email that estimate back. That's just saved him or her driving out for half an hour each way, going back to the office, doing some math, and then emailing you a report. That's, I don't know, for a typical estimate in the residential HVAC market takes about 4 hours of human labor, billed at $100 an hour. So that just saved them $400 per estimate. And they might do five estimates before they actually get a job. So they're saving $2,000 per job. That's incredible, right? If you're doing three jobs a week, that is $6,000 of savings per week times 50 weeks. That is, what is that? 6,000, 60,000. That's $300,000 of savings for a $1 million HVAC company. That is incredible.
That is.
Right? If you were running a million-dollar HVAC company and you found $300,000 of savings, isn't that that's $300,000 that goes right into the owner's pocket, or you can pay your company, your employees more, have them do more work. Even if my math is off by a factor of 3x, you're still saving $100,000 on a million-dollar business. That's incredible. That's a 10% margin increase.
It's enormous.
And that's Google today, by the way. Without, you don't need rocket science. You just need someone who knows a little bit about technology. You can go do that today, right? You don't need to wait for advanced technologies 5 years from now.
Well, I'll give you an example of something that happened with me yesterday. We're launching another brand and trying to get an email address set up, but trying to make sure it comes through, that we can send to, both brands and we can receive from both brands. And historically, I would have to go call some IT person. I'd have to spend time explaining the problem to them, have to do this, that, and the other. And instead, I just went into, I think I use Copilot, and I just said, hey, here's what I want to do. How do I do it? And it gave me step-by-step instructions. It got resolved faster. I didn't lose my computer for a few hours while they were working on it. It was significantly cheaper. And it's the And it was not at all intuitive. When I was looking at it, I was like, holy cow, it was all the way going down to, Microsoft still has this thing called PowerShell where, you enter command lines to do things. And it just said, okay, bring up PowerShell and then put this line in there, and then put this line in there, and then put this line in there. And so I was doing some pretty advanced IT stuff, but I didn't have to hire an IT guy. I didn't have to wait for them to show up. I didn't have to, lose my system while they were working on it.
So that's exactly right, right? That's going back to what I was saying earlier, where can I expand a person outside their comfort zone or skill set? You may not know how to use command, PowerShell and the command line interface to see what's called a CLI, because you don't know, the syntax, that new item, or IP conflicts slash reset. But AI can do that for you. You can go a step further. Rather than AI telling you or Copilot telling you, hey, Craig, copy this command over into PowerShell, you can go the next step and give Copilot the permission to do that, and it'll do that automatically. Which is, that's where the real magic starts happening, where you give the AI, digital arms and legs. So instead of telling you what to do and you being its arms and legs, it can then talk to other systems and just do it by itself. And that starts getting really exciting. You need to be a little bit more both comfortable with technology and technical to do that, but that's where magic starts happening, because you have four different AI agents doing totally different things, right? I have one in the background with Valentine's Day coming up doing research, and it's going to order a gift for my wife. I instructed it based on, what my budget is, what my preferences are, the type of personality she has, and it's out there doing research right now. Probably done by, it only takes about 3 or 4 minutes to do, and probably already ordered it on Amazon and will send me a message on my phone saying, "Hey Nick, it's going to arrive, on Friday."
That's amazing. Well, so let's kind of put a bow on this. So we talked about a lot of this. How does this play out at Eagle Rock CFO?
Sure. So look, for the types of services that we offer, they would, if you hired a big consulting firm, they would charge you about $500,000 a month for this. Or if you hired a traditional consulting firm or mid-sized consulting firm, they charge you like 50 grand. They come in, they spend about 3 weeks looking at all your numbers, talking to a bunch of people, spending a lot of time, both yours and theirs, and charge you about 30, 40 grand and say, "Hey, Craig, go do this." And that would be restricted to their domain of expertise, if they're, let's say, factory consultants or financial consultants or marketing consultants. We build tech that connects to your systems. It can connect to your systems or your Excel spreadsheets or whatever, it doesn't really matter. And we charge our customers literally $3,500 a month, so between 1 to 5% of what anybody else charges, and it pops out 3 to 5 recommendations that you, Craig, can do for your business today that will make you more profitable next month. And I'll give you a practical example. One of our first clients was a $22 million Hollywood talent agency. I know nothing about Hollywood. I know nothing about talent agencies. I know nothing about celebrities, right? About 3 hours after this guy sent me the documents, and they were documents that were unstructured, they were chaotic, I just pumped it into our system, and it said, "Look, this business can do three things. It can save $332,000 in costs right away by just cutting these random costs that you don't have to fire anybody. You don't have to like cut any, major projects. It's just wasted money, free money, $332,000. Number two, it predicted that they needed to do a liquidity infusion because of a really wacky working capital thing that was going to happen, causing them to to run out of cash, even though they're profitable, which no human being would have thought of, right? This is a business that's growing fast and profitable. Why would they ever run out of money? It's not a thing a normal human being would think about. And number three, it said, hey, you're missing all these insurance policies that you really need because of the line of business you're in. And so that took us about, let's say, 3, 4 hours to do. If I was doing this for a new client in a traditional consulting methodology, it would have taken three or four people working about 3 or 4 weeks for cumulatively across like 160 hours of labor. So we took 160 hours of labor at, let's say, $200 an hour, so $32,000 of cost, down to $3,500. What that does is kind of three incredible things. Number one, I, Nick, don't need to be an expert on your company, your industry, or whatever, right? Number two, because I can bring the cost down, it means I can charge you way less because it's not costing me $30,000 to deliver that service. Number three is it can deliver insights that are no like that human beings are going to miss out because human beings kind of think about what their domains of expertise are, right? I as a non-Hollywood guy wouldn't think about all these crazy insurance policies that are really important in Hollywood. It will discover things comprehensively, our technology or similar technologies, in fact. Just discover things that human beings would miss. And that's incredibly powerful when you can deliver something at a 1% of the cost of like an elite consulting firm would charge, because it just makes it more accessible to small businesses and it comes up with really cool ways to make money for them.
Wow. So what do you think is going to happen to McKinsey and Accenture and companies like that?
Sure. So look, I'm an ex-McKinsey guy. I'm not going to comment on their strategy. I think these elite consulting firms are going to, they're adopting these technologies as aggressively as they can because they're not stupid. They see the opportunity to deliver more value. And what's going to happen is their clients are going to ask for, 10 times as much value creation as they did because they know that McKinsey is also going to get 10x leverage from these technologies. So at the high end, customers are going to demand more value for that same, $500,000 price tag. And then conversely, at the smaller end, there's folks like me saying, look, it doesn't make sense for me to compete against McKinsey or BCG or Accenture, but rather because the cost has come down so much, we can expand the market again, like the Model T, right? Make that mass-produced car affordable to people who couldn't afford the $500,000 car 2 years ago. They still can't afford the $500,000 car 2 years ago, but we can offer that car now at $5,000, which makes it affordable.
That's pretty awesome. Well, Nick, this has been amazing. How can folks reach you?
Sure. So our website is eaglerockcfo.com. We offer a bunch of free tools, by the way, including some free AI tools that I encourage people to check out. My email address is on the website. So yeah, just find us on eaglerockcfo.com. If you want to contact me, there's literally my email and my business partner Dan's email. So feel free to email us. We respond to literally 100% of emails.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks for coming on Layers and Legacies.
Thank you so much for having me, Craig.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.